This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. With the rapidly changing makeup of the local workforce, businesses in the region are learning to adapt in order to become more culturally competent. That is to say, behavior and communication style are adjusted to accomplish the business's goal and to attract and retain new talent. These businesses that are slower to adapt may face challenges in the global marketplace. But a program offered by the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber of Commerce wants to help. So let's talk about that. Joining Cincinnati Edition today to discuss are Mercy Health at Fairfield. Oh, I'm going to try that again. I screwed it up. We practiced before we went on. Let me try one more time. Ramona, I apologize. Mercy Health Fairfield Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Ramona Cheek. Welcome, Ramona.
Good morning.
Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber Vice President of Inclusion, Mary Stagman. Welcome, Mary.
Good to be here.
And U.S. Bank Vice President and Customer Experience Manager, Jim Reynolds. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Questions, comments, join us. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Talk at WVXU.org is our email, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Mary, when did the Chamber identify that there was a need in this region to address cultural competency?
It's a great question. It was about 5 years ago. We released a report called Diverse by Design, Meeting the Talent Challenge in a Global Economy. And we got insight from chief human resource officers and chief diversity officers from companies across the region, as well as from greater Cincinnatians of all kinds. And one of the things that emerged from those conversations was that as our population changes here, as it is changing around the country, as our workplaces become more diverse, they also need to become more inclusive. And in order to make that happen, cultural competency is on the list of 21st century skills needed to build inclusive workplaces and inclusive communities.
So how does the program that the Chamber is offering work exactly?
Well, it's interesting. We've tested it twice now. We ran two pilots to make sure that the time frame, the kind of learning we were provided, all worked and yielded the results that we were looking for. So the pilots were six sessions. They take place over a period of about 2.5 months, so there's space in between them. The core sessions are about 4 hours each, so we can go deep on a topic. But the most important thing is that we measure the cultural competence of the people in the program at the beginning and at the end. And we're measuring them on an international standard of cultural competence to make sure that we're actually moving the needle on their skills. And both pilots produced outcomes well over what's expected to be considered significant.
And so what are those questions to gauge people's current level of cultural competence?
Well, it's complicated. You know, the assessment is one of, it's called the IDI, the Intercultural Development Inventory, and it's one of those things that I personally want to argue with the whole time I'm taking the assessment, because it gives you these statements and you decide your agreement or disagreement with the statements, but they speak to how you meet the rest of the world, how you meet difference in the world in particular.
And Ramona, you're a graduate of the pilot program. You work in healthcare at Mercy Health Fairfield Hospital. I can get it right this time. And I'm curious of what type of cultural shifts you're seeing in that industry where the workforce's competency could be improved.
I think the biggest shift that we're seeing is I think when people think of cultural competency and diversity, they think along lines of race. What we're seeing mostly is along the lines of generations. And I think that this class really addressed that. But for me, what the class did was help me have more insight to myself. And what I found in taking the class that I thought I was very cultural competent. I'm an African-American woman. I have grown up in a world that was mostly Caucasian. It is not unusual for me to be the only Black person in a room of 100, 150. So I thought I was very adept in cultural competence. I knew how to work in the world. And what I found from taking the class is I had spent all my time, instead of being culturally competent, I had spent my time assimilating and not truly bringing forth my culture into the workplace. And so I think what the class helped me is to feel more comfortable bringing my culture, both from age and a race stand, into the work environment and let that be part of the learning in the environment.
Was there a particular moment where you realized that you'd been viewing this either incorrectly or just from a different standpoint than you're looking at it now? You said that you were assimilating previously.
It wasn't until after I took the test, the assessment? Because I really thought that, I mean, everyone, I think, thinks that they're very culturally competent and very aware. And it showed that there was a big difference between what I thought and what I actually was and felt in taking the assessment. And in part of it, I thought, oh, my gosh, how could this be true? Until they said, Ramona, what you've been doing is assimilating. You've been trying to just kind of pass through and assimilate instead of really bringing forth who you are and the diversity of your culture and your background into the workplace.
And Jim, what about your perspective from the financial sector? Because you're also a graduate of the pilot program.
I am. It was very, very successful. It, similar to Ramona, taught me a lot about myself. I too thought I was very diverse. And it moved me along the spectrum. But as a bank, we absolutely, as a company, want to be able to serve the community we serve in all ways. And so taking the information not only that I learned personally, but taking that information back to U.S. Bank, having cultural introductions through we do fairs, if you will, around culture to introduce our employees to the community we serve via food, language, dress, the many, many aspects of culture so that, as Ramona said, employees show up bringing their full self to work. That's extremely important, but also being better prepared to serve our customers.
Well, let me ask you, Ramona and Jim, after having completed the program, when you are looking at your coworkers and your workspace in general, now that you've finished this, has your perspective changed in the way that you observe just day-to-day interactions in the place?
It has. And I think one of the things a class teaches us to do is to make a safe place for people to talk about it. I think it's cultural competence is one of those things that was hidden and people didn't want to talk about. And I think that after taking the class, we talk a lot about it at work, about different viewpoints. And it's okay for people to be different and to share those viewpoints and to have learning from it. It's like, my viewpoint is different and this is why it is. Let me hear about yours. And I think that that's how you get to a common place, is understanding each other. And that's what moves you from really just tolerating the differences to celebrating the differences, which is where the class wants to get you.
And what about you, Jim? Are you hyper aware now of instances where cultural competence is either on display or could be better deployed?
Absolutely. And it starts with you personally, me personally, in how I approach new folks. You know, unlike how I was raised, to start by asking, what's your name? Where are you from? Where do you work? I learned to start with asking, what's your story? We all have a story. We have a story that shapes our beliefs, our intrinsic selves. And but yeah, it's made me very, very aware of how to listen and really stop, not be emotionally hijacked, not only at work, but also if you're on social media today, in the divisiveness that we experience in the world, to stop, really listen, and not allow yourself to become emotionally hijacked.
I'm glad that I heard Ramona reference the generational divide and some of the challenges that even that can present, because I wasn't sure if that was part of the program, but I did prepare some questions just out of curiosity of whether that was considered. Mm-hmm. I do want to note a piece of a report by Ravi Unites, Inc., which states in part, quote, millennial idealism offers a great opportunity to overcome many social injustices, including racism. This generation is, quote, colorblind and multicultural. So by embracing this aspect of millennial mindset, we can organically grow out of some implicit biases that currently hinder cultural competence in the workplace. So I'm curious, now that we've got two people who have completed this program and one person who is sort of spearheading the program on behalf of the Cincinnati Chamber, do you find that this new generation of workplace leaders, as millennials move into management roles, are more easily adaptable or eager to learn about cross-cultural competency, Mary?
I think it's fair to say that they're perhaps more open than previous generations to this kind of experience. But I think the young professionals who've gone through the pilots would tell you that they were surprised, too, by the degree to which they learned in the program. So I think we have a bit of a, I might take issue with the gentleman you quoted and say that we have this idea that millennials have got this all figured out. And yet when we get them into the workplace, we realize that they need skills to bridge divides as well. And if that's not across race or identity, It could be across politics. It could be across generations, as Ramona has already suggested. So we don't make any assumptions that any individual comes into the world or even reaches adulthood with all the cultural competence they need. It's a skill we're not born with. It's one that can be taught. And the reason we're targeting leaders in this program is because we believe they go back into their organizations and they're like pebbles in a pond. They create a ripple effect that influences more people in their organizations.
So then as part of the program, are you exploring age demographics as a culture and an area where people should learn how better to communicate and interact with one another?
So I think it's important to understand what the program does and what it doesn't do. It would be almost impossible for us to go deep on every potential area of cultural difference that someone might encounter. So we don't focus on what might happen in a specific sector or a specific occupation. So, for instance, in Ramona's case, we wouldn't teach a healthcare professional how to interact with a Muslim family in the emergency room. What we do teach them to do is to step back, to realize when they're in the presence of some sort of difference or conflict, and then to act appropriately, whether that is to use the skills that we've taught them to ask better questions, to create connection, or whether that is to bring in support or a translator or whatever is required to be successful in that. The class also, though, teaches itself. So because we attract and really recruit across the generations, we get the kind of cross-generational conversation that you're talking about in the class itself among the people who participate.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join the conversation. We can go to the phone lines now. Mark is on the line. Hi, Mark. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I just wanted to know if the panel has ever taken the implicit bias test at implicit.harvard.edu. I learned about it on the Hidden Brain program. And it is an excellent means of determining the biases that we subconsciously carry into a situation. And from that program, I learned that, you know, it's very useful in taking the test. I have yet to take it, I might say, but it is a test, what we're talking about, that can really delineate how one's own biases are working subconsciously in the decisions that we're making.
Mark, we appreciate the call and the tip very much. His questions about the implicit bias test and whether that's part of this.
So, Mark, I would tell you that, indeed, our first deep dive session of the program is all about implicit bias and the effects that it has, both positive and negative. And then we encourage everyone in the class to go home and take several of the IAT tests that are available online. They can pick and choose which ones they want to take, but we find that those insights that they bring back into the classroom are really important. And Ramona or Jim, you might have a comment about your own experience on that.
It was insightful. It was. You know, you watch videos on social media about white privilege, and it's daunting to understand the privilege that I have grown up with. I also was introduced to implicit bias at the Freedom Center, the great exhibit that they opened last year. If you've not had a chance to take part in that, I strongly encourage you to do so.
And Ramona, your experience with the implicit bias test?
I have not taken that test per se. I've done reading and things on it. But I would say that I think taking the IDI kind of got into what biases. It did show what biases you might have that you were not aware of and blind spots that you had.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. There are a few industries that haven't been impacted by the now global nature of the modern marketplace. Even small businesses are learning to adjust to different cultures. And if not, perhaps they should be. Let's continue now with Mercy Health Fairfield Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Ramona Cheek, Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber Vice President of Inclusion Mary Stagaman, and U.S. Bank Vice President and Customer Experience Manager Jim Reynolds. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. So we're talking about this cross-cultural competency program being offered by the Chamber. And some entities, organizations, corporations may look at this as a long-term investment in their staff and to see how this can pay off down the road, how it can impact their hiring practices and that sort of thing. But what would you say, Mary, would be the immediate benefit to those who go through the program?
Well, I think we're in a time right now where we tend to go to our respective corners all too easily. And we find ourselves in workplaces where people one cubicle over from you can have radically different political views, for instance. And at the same time, our workplaces are diversifying, whether that's intentional or just part of the organic process of the changes in population in this country. So the need for cultural competence is ever greater. So if we can send somebody back to their workplace who is open to conversation, who is open to building rapport across the kind of differences that we know exist, we should see immediate benefits. We took our own, about half of our own team at the Chamber through the program as well. And one of the chief outcomes I heard from them afterward was, I'm having conversations with people in the organization with whom in the past I've had conflict or friction, and we're resolving it and we're finding ways to work together better.
Ramona, was there an area where you thought, I feel this right now after having completed this
program? I think there's two areas, actually. It helps with the workers in that teamwork and that having the synergy of teams, having that cultural competency helps with that synergy of teams. And that impacts patient care. Also, understanding cultural competency has an impact on health. If you understand the culture from whence someone comes, you understand and can impact their health and their health choices. And so it's very important on both levels, from the labor market and from the patient care market.
And what about you, Jim?
You know what? We have really seen it as we, as I said earlier, embrace the community. A gay couple comes in for a loan, or an African-American customer. How we listen, how we question to identify the needs is really the conversation we're seeing more so on the front line, let alone as what Ramona said throughout our day-to-day. It really has helped us have those crucial conversations.
513-419-7100 is the number. Back to the phones now. Stephen is on the line. Hi, Stephen. What's your question or comment?
My question is for any of the panelists, how they bring in a historical perspective of discrimination and power dynamics. Because thus far, we've been talking about difference as though there's just like sort of A and B. I like chocolate, you like vanilla. But there are some severe historical power dynamics that play into particularly race, but really gender too, sexuality as well. And gender. So I just wonder like how that, because that really influences how people experience moments and how someone who might consider they might respect someone's difference, but not acknowledge this, you know, deep privilege that they're coming with or that kind of thing.
Stephen, we appreciate the call very much. We'll hang up and let the panel address that. Is there any exploration of that dynamic in the course of this program?
We cover it from the very beginning in terms of helping people to understand the historical antecedents to things like the bias that we see today in the workplace and in the community, to help people to understand why someone in a particular setting may be, to the caller's point, reacting differently than you might expect. Helping people to understand that what culture you bring into the room, what privilege I as a white woman bring into the room, is not the same experience that someone of color or someone from another country or someone with a different sexual orientation may bring to the table. So absolutely, it's a thread that runs through the entire program.
I think the program also helps you feel comfortable being vulnerable. And I think that when you have these discussions, there is a certain amount of vulnerability. I know that during our class, it was when the Charlottesville episode happened. And that happened to be, in the past, I would not have talked about that at the workplace setting and would not have shared my story and my feelings about that with the group of people that I was leading. But as a result of the class, I felt comfortable with talking about how that affected me and my story and my perspective. And we had a really rich conversation with my leadership group on that topic that lasted about an hour. So it was fascinating.
Well, let's talk about some of the topics that are covered within the body of the program, and all of you can feel free to weigh in on your experience with it. One of the areas, and this is, I think, coming from your news release that was sent out about the program, the business case for cultural competence. Mary, what is the business case for this program?
So we say about the business case for inclusion generally that we don't need to talk about it anymore because it's been made. If you want to know what it is, just Google it and you can find all the resources you need. But fundamentally, we know that companies that are more inclusive, provide the opportunity for everyone to bring their entire selves to work, who have more diverse workforces and leverage those differences, have greater productivity, more innovation, and better bottom lines. So enhancing cultural competence helps them to achieve all of those benefits that come from more diverse workplaces and more inclusive workplaces.
Another area is the role of emotional intelligence in bridging cultural differences. First, I'm curious how we define emotional intelligence.
Well, it's that ability to read the room, to read the person across from you, to pick up on cues that may not be maybe very subtle about someone being uncomfortable in a conversation, for instance. It's that extra set of sort of radar that some of us have instinctively and others have to learn that allows us to work in a place to make more people feel comfortable and to interact with them more successfully.
Another focus area is the role of leaders in raising cultural competence of employees, constituents, stakeholders, and more. And I'm wondering if prospective business leaders and future managers are more competitive if they have high cultural competence. Is this looked at as an important and necessary skill in the advancement in the hiring process?
Absolutely it is. It's become part of our performance evaluations. And so very much.
Yeah. And I think it's the reason why you see it on curriculum now in business schools in particular, that when I talk to folks at UC and NKU and other universities in the region, they're telling me that they want to send their students or graduates out into the world with a baseline of cultural competence that they might not have had when they entered college.
And you're also going to explore the neuroscience of bias and strategies for reducing the negative impact. So without knowing for sure, this sounds like it may be an exploration of personal biases that maybe exists below our own surfaces.
Sure. So that's what Mark was talking about with the IAT, which actually helps us measure to what degree we have implicit bias against people of color, against certain religions, against people who are overweight, against the LGBTQ population, whatever it is, we know now enough about the way our brains work. And as he referenced, Shankar-Vedantam has done a great job of teasing out what's really going on in our brains. The leading expert on this internationally is Mahzarin Banaji. And what she has taught us is that there are all these patterns in our brains that we're wired for almost from birth. And it goes back to our fight or flight response. And so if we learn more about the presence of those synapses, the connections in our brain, and what they do when we're in the workplace or in the community, we can better mitigate them. It's unconscious, so we're not always aware it's happening. So sometimes we have to build structural changes into our workplaces in order to mitigate bias. So there are lots of strategies for how to do that in a hiring process, for instance, now that we know that it happens.
Inc. magazine had a feature article about cultural competency, and I want to read a part of it. It says, quote, "Cultures are complex and fluid, not static. So determining your organization's cultural competence requires understanding nuanced interactions and behaviors. The challenge is you aren't just determining your employees' abilities to work with people from different backgrounds, ethnicities, age groups, or religious tradition. You're also evaluating the depth of knowledge and experience within the company as a whole to identify any gaps." So if you're a business that is inching into the global marketplace, and let's say your workforce isn't very diverse, and you don't have the knowledge or the understanding of the challenges that are ahead, how are you supposed to recognize that there are advantages to cultural competency, and what are you supposed to do about it to be prepared if you're, say, not active in the chamber, or you're just a business that's growing and looking to reach that global audience, and maybe you're somewhat ignorant about these things?
I would say scan the horizon and look what others are doing, certainly, and do your due diligence, do the research, connect with the universities, connect with the chamber in the area to do a baseline and see where you are. There is testing that is available, as we've discussed today, to see where your workforce is and where you want and need to go.
So there's really no clear-cut way, though, for these businesses to recognize that maybe we need some help with this.
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone needs help with it. You know, I think there may be more, there are businesses that are more aware of the need for this than others, but I think we can make a fundamental assumption that all of us can improve our cultural competence at any point in our lives. It's a journey, not a destination. And so if a business is thinking, you know, we know that the world around us is changing, we're not sure how we need to adapt in order to be successful in that changing set of markets and with changing customers, we have a conversation. We need to have a conversation with them.
I was able to read part of this academic study about cross-cultural competence as well.
Yeah.
And I want to note that part of the conclusion of this study was that the sample group was 56 healthcare professionals in the Midwest. And they were asked 19 different questions. And they largely expressed confidence in their ability to meet the needs of multicultural clientele, even though nearly half of them had no formal cross-cultural training. They seemed to view the cross-cultural education as just cultural awareness. And the key finding for me as I was reading this study was that, and this is a quote that I pulled, "the principles of systemic cross-cultural approaches, such as a recognition of racism, power imbalances, entrenched majority culture biases, and the need for self-reflexivity, were scarcely acknowledged by the study participants." And then also the findings indicate a need for interventions that acknowledge the value of cultural awareness-based approaches while also exploring the utility of more comprehensive cultural competence and safety approaches. So I'm wondering then if there are businesses out there who think, this is no big deal. We understand this. We've got a grasp on what's important culturally, even though perhaps they don't, and how you'll be able to engage them in this type of conversation.
I would say, of course, I think that that's a prevailing attitude, is that everyone, I think you come into the class thinking that you're culturally competent. I do. And I think that is taking in the class that when you explore and find out more about yourself to say, oh, I'm not there. And if I'm not there and I'm willing to talk about why I'm not there, that's what brings a richness to it. And that's what leaders, I think, bring, because you have the platform to talk with other people. As a leader, you bring forth and you have the groups that you can say, hey, this is what I discovered. And that does trickle down. So, you know, I talk with my managers and leaders and they talk with their staff. And all of a sudden, you have rich conversation that's going all through the organization about it.
And thus why this program is so very important, especially to take it to scale in our region today. It is very much needed.
So, Mary, you've had two trial runs of this course, and the real thing starts in September.
Yes.
Well, we will have links to
I wouldn't say the real thing. I would say the expanded program, because it was very real when we were running the pilots.
Understood. At WVXU.org in the Cincinnati Edition tab, you'll find all of the information about this program being offered through the Chamber. Our thanks to Mercy Health Fairfield Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Ramona Cheek, Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber Vice President of Inclusion Mary Stagaman, and U.S. Bank Vice President and Customer Experience Manager Jim Reynolds. Thanks for being here, all of you.
Thank you.
Up next, lots of talented chefs dream of opening their own business, but maybe they don't have the resources to do so or even to develop their skills. One program in Covington is changing that, and now a few chefs are on their way. We'll talk about it next. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.